All right, good afternoon, everybody. We are here with Coach Adam, and today we're going to be talking a little bit about how he prepared for his performance at Ironman Arizona. So the format of this will be sort of a Q&A, and I'll ask Adam some questions, and he will share a little bit about what he did and how he went about his training to reach his goals. And before we get into the questions, I'd like to start with his overall time. So Adam finished Ironman Arizona in a time of 9:55, which was a huge personal best for him. It was his second Ironman, and his splits break down as a 55-minute swim, 5:05 on the bike, and a 3:41 for the run. So what we're going to do is just ask Adam some questions, and he'll share how he went about training and preparing for this race. So to start with, let's talk about what was your goal for this race, Adam?
Well, when I was watching other people at Ironman Arizona the last couple of years, that was really, hey, I got to go back and do this. And as you watch people stream in and struggle those last few miles, I thought, hey, that'd be awesome if I could run 9 minutes a mile, because that seems like a win. And so the whole training, I kind of had that in mind, you know, right under 4 hours in terms of the marathon part. And so I wanted to make sure that the bike and the swim, you know, made me ready for that. As far as the bike, I was sitting in a training one day and thought, you know, 5 hours, going under 5 hours would be pretty amazing. And that's a big stretch. I knew 5.5 hours wouldn't be pushing it at all. So I thought that'd be a good goal. And luckily, I'm a pretty good swimmer.
I'd say, yeah.
And so I knew, as far as the swim goes, I kind of just had to keep in shape. I didn't need to put in tons and tons of hours and yards. You know, if anything, if I doubled my output in terms of my time in the pool, I probably could have dropped down to 52, 51 minutes, which in terms of an Ironman really isn't going to help all that much. So most of my focus was on the run and the bike.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the 55, just to clarify, was pretty much cruising for Adam. I know he you know, he wasn't taking it easy, but it definitely, he wasn't pressing and pushing the pace, because, you know, his training kind of prepared him to just swim through it controlled, so he can get out of the swim and start the bike and really start to put in the work. So let's move on to the bike. Let's take a look at that. And the question that I have for you, Adam, is what was your main focus building into your bike? And what was your goal with your bike training?
Well, I started training back in February, and my main goal was to convince my wife I needed a new bike. And that actually worked out really well. I got an awesome new bike in August, and I think that was it. So you don't really have to train. As long as you get a new bike, that's all you have to do.
That's everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I actually did start back in February, and I knew I typically do halves, which is going to be a lot faster, obviously more intense training. So I needed a very big base, and there was a lot of power work early on, but I knew I just needed to be on the bike a lot. We'd actually meet Saturday mornings at 4 o'clock, and a bunch of us would meet up, and we had some long power intervals that Joby made us do, which was awesome. And it's a lot more fun riding indoors with friends. But as far as specific preparation in terms of the bike, that really didn't happen till the middle of the summer, where we started really building up the time. And, you know, the Saturday long rides, the goal was just, hey, you know, get those 6 hours on the bike. Worst case scenario, I thought, you know, 5.5 hours on the bike for the actual race. And luckily, Joby would take us out sometimes, and we'd do hill repeats, and then I'd get to, or not even hill repeats, he has a diabolical hill loop session down here in Yorba Linda, and then we'd go out for 4 hours after that out on the river trail. During the week, I had two workouts, one of which I loved, and the other which I really liked. The one I really liked on Tuesday, typically it'd be shorter intervals, a minute up to 2 minutes by the end of training, where I was going over critical power, over threshold power, where I'd have to work really hard, but for a lot less time. And so that's nice. You can work really hard, and then after a minute or so, or by the end of training, 2 minutes, okay, I get a nice break. I get to recover for that next interval. And so I like that. But on Thursdays, I'd have longer intervals, which were 5 minutes and then 10 minutes and then 20 minutes, which were sub-threshold, you know, 80, 85% of critical power, which was nice because the goal was that smooth, consistent pedaling and not out of gas, but it was more of a mental effort. So I always look forward to that on Thursday, getting that real long ride in where I'm right at that a little bit above, but race pace intensity.
Cool. That's one of my favorite sessions too. And I think it's important to have to build into that, right? You don't just jump into a 20-minute set. So you said you progressed from like 5 to 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not just from 5 to 10 minutes overall, but you know, at the beginning I was doing 2 or 3 5-minute sessions and build that up. So that way I'm doing, you know, 8 5-minute sessions. And then once that's not a problem, taking a step back and some of that time off, but then it's, you know, 3 10-minute sessions and 4 10-minute sessions and 5 10-minute sessions until we're building up to 3 20-minute sessions.
Nice.
Or intervals.
Yeah.
I'm not taking an entire time off in between.
Yeah. So to clarify, those are intervals within that bike session. So what about your cadence during those? Did you vary that or did you stick to a certain range?
The power intervals on Tuesday, the shorter efforts were always 55 to 60 RPMs, really slow building that power. High speed footwork on the bike doesn't work well for me in races. I feel a lot more comfortable at lower cadences, maybe in the race 70, 75, but getting ready for that a whole lot lower to build power. And we've also done testing and just even doing an acceleration, keeping the wattage the same, you know, the carb burn rate goes sky high as soon as my legs start to turn over more quickly. In the longer intervals on those Thursdays, it was about the same, pretty slow, trying to build that power where it's not, I didn't want anything to become aerobic. Yeah. I'm sorry, anaerobic. Keep that effort nice and low. Yeah. And as far as the long rides, the goal was to stay on the bike. And so those were typically outdoors until I got really bored of doing the same thing and made a critical error and did, you know, 5 6 hours on the trainer.
Yeah, that's rough. That's rough. That's a tough one.
But that was, you know, staying in aero the whole time, keeping the cadence what felt like normal for race pace, not keeping the power too high or too low. Just staying on the bike.
What would you, so for your long aerobic sessions, I find that I tell some of my athletes that, you know, they need to dial back the intensity and they don't need to push so hard on their long aerobic rides. Yeah, we have time for intervals. We're going to do hills. But in general, did you find yourself trying to restrain yourself a bit on those long rides?
Yeah. If I looked at my power, it was way below what I'd ever do in a race. Maybe 70%, 65% of critical power. So I wasn't working terribly hard, but the goal was to keep pedaling smoothly the whole time, power uphills, power downhills, just nice and even the whole way through. Those long sessions were mental training as much as physical training for me, just figuring out how to be on the bike, not be entertained by, you know, movies or podcasts or anything like that. And keep focused the whole time.
Cool. And as far as your execution on race day, so Ironman Arizona is really nice for pacing because you know, like you can pretty objectively look at your laps from lap 1 to lap 2 to lap 3, and as well as your power, and you can see how well you pace that. So as far as execution on race day, how did that work out for you if we compared laps 1, 2, and 3?
Well, if you look at the times, they were a little bit different. But as far as my power output, I think it was dead on. They were all about 205 to 210 watts the whole way through. So the first lap, the wind must have picked up or done something different, because it was about 5 minutes slower than lap 2. And on lap 2, I even had stopped at special needs on the bike to pick up some extra bottles. The whole race, it was head down, aero position with just staring at that power meter, keeping everything nice and even. It was great. there's a nice strong downhill, but I had big enough gears that I was able to push the wattage the whole way down. I thought the pacing was great. I also really like that course. Yeah, you can compare lap to lap, but also it's constantly changing. You know, by the time you get to the turnaround at the top of the first lap, hey, I'm like halfway done. You're halfway done with the lap. And then you think, well, by the time next time I'm up here, you know, I'm going to be halfway done literally with the race. And it just, there were nice check marks and benchmarks along the way. But I was definitely not paying attention to time when I was on the bike. I was only paying attention to keeping my effort nice and even.
Oh, and that last lap, how did you feel coming in for that last lap?
I felt fresh. I didn't struggle at all on the bike. Those long sessions helped. I had the power in the legs. You know, I wasn't worried about pushing my power up way too high, anywhere near my critical power. So it felt like a nice long bike ride that I was doing on a Saturday, just with more people around. So it was a blast.
Nice. And as far as power output, how did your power output compare to what you would typically average for like a weekend training ride?
It was about 25-30 watts higher for the race as compared to those weekend rides. It was way higher.
Yeah. And that I think is a testament to the training that Adam did. It was purposeful. It was not about, you know, sometimes the training, you have to check your ego and just do what you need to do to get the results. And the goal is always to push more power on race day and be efficient at that range. And that's exactly what you did. So nice work on that. So let's move on to the run. Adam will tell you he's a trained swimmer and that's his background, right? And,
that's right.
Would you say the run is probably your weakest of the three?
Well, I was a swimmer in high school and college, and then I love cycling, and running's the struggle. But I think if you look at the numbers, compared to other people in age groups, I'm technically a better runner. Maybe that's because I know I have to work so much harder at it. But yeah, running, I just know that's not my strong suit. So lot of work.
And before I ask you about your run training and kind of what you did and your goals, I want to just state Adam managed to negative split the marathon in an Ironman, which is, it's a pretty huge accomplishment. And so he did that. It was by design. You don't go out and intentionally plant a negative split. You just want to run an even pace. You don't want to slow down. You want to minimize that breakdown that happens, which Adam clearly did. But he negative split the marathon and did really, really well. So let's talk about your run training. What was your goal with your run training?
Like I said, the goal was, hey, I want to be able to run the whole Ironman. The first Ironman I did, that's before I knew Joby, before I knew anything. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to swim and run and bike a lot. And I was a lot younger, so I wasn't very mentally tough. And I just remember, man, getting onto the run and, you know, the first 5 miles, adrenaline's rushing, no problem. Yeah. And then it was walk run. I did 6 hours and it was mentally tough. And I thought about it afterwards and was talking with a buddy that I did that race with back in 2012. And we basically did the same amount of running, you know, 6 hours, walk, run, walk, run. And we both said the same thing, you know, you're mentally broken and okay, I can't run. And so you walk, but walking doesn't feel any better. It's not like you're relaxing while you're walking. It just hurts longer and you're out on the course longer. So that was the big one, was to run the whole way through. And like I said, 9 minutes, I thought that was going to be great. That was going to be a stretch for me, but achievable. So I thought that was a great plan. It was funny, as I got closer and closer to race day, you know, long runs on, I'd always do them Sunday mornings. We had a baby on the way, so I had to get up nice and early. So I'd be done with my long runs by 7 in the morning.
Yeah, throw that in the mix.
it was quite a year.
Yeah.
So I should have known I was going to have a better run than 9 minutes a mile, because the first time I had my really longest run, they were about 19, 20 miles. I got back and I looked at my watch and I wasn't pushing. You know, I didn't slow down. I'd get a drink of water, grab a gel, or go to the bathroom along the run route. But I'd average 8:20, 8:25, and I get to my driveway, and I was just like literally punching the air, celebrating, like, holy crap, I can't believe that just happened. But same thing. Okay, I hadn't run, or I hadn't ridden my bike that morning. I had, of course, ridden the day before, but good things were happening. So yeah. I should have been able to predict that, but, you know, I think it was probably smart to not get too excited.
Now, and so your run training, so you're running that pace, and
well, as far as the long runs go, that was keep the heart rate down, keep it aerobic, keep everything nice and easy. You know, you're not going to build speed on those long runs, kind of like the long bike, just kind of need to be out there, keep that turnover going, keep that cadence nice and high, be as efficient as possible.
Nice. And that obviously worked very well for you. What was your average pace on your for your marathon?
It was 8:20, 8:25, somewhere right in there, which was bonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you asked me, hey, what are you going to do in a standalone marathon? I'd be super excited to do that right now. It was absolutely crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Tracking you on the day I was there, but seeing you and then tracking you, just not seeing your pace change was pretty epic. And I think the one thing that stood out was your cadence on the run. It just seemed to be every time I saw you, whether it was right there on next to Mill Avenue or on the other side of the river basin, your cadence just seemed like it was steady and quick the whole time through. So is there anything you did to focus on your cadence within your training, or how was that a part of how you trained?
I mean, yes and no. The cadence has been a huge issue. I'm taller. I'm not a runner. I didn't know how to run with anything other than, you know, turning over my legs. Glutes were never activated. So this has been an 11-year learning how to run sort of battle. And, you know, I've learned so much from you, Joby. Normally, my cadence is super low if I'm not paying attention. So that was a huge thing in those long runs, paying attention to cadence. That'll get you through a lot. But there was a lot of cadence building. Monday night runs, I had a group of friends in Chino Hills. We'd meet every Monday night, at least up until the training got really intense. And then, hey, I need to do a little bit more. Nice short hill repeats where the focus is on getting up and down those hills nice and quick, that nice quick turnover, whether we're going uphill and building power or downhill, and that eccentric loading, getting a little bit stronger downhill.
Nice. And, you know, you had a great, great race from beginning to end. It was just well executed. You were smart out there. You did all of the right things. And it was awesome to see you just kill it out there. I mean, you had a great race, and I knew for you, the big variable would be how was the run going to shake out. Oh, yeah. Just because of your past experience with running the marathon. So you went from what, 6 hour marathon to 3:41.
And 6 divided by 2 is 3. I cut it in half if you're doing the math poorly.
So that, I mean, that's pretty solid. But you know, obviously it's everything impacts, one discipline impacts the other. And, you know, your focus on the bike helped the run, and your focus on the run helped you to be more efficient. Your training on the run helped with developing the right sort of efficiency that you need for an Ironman. And so you nailed it. One couple more things that I want to ask you regarding nutrition. What did you do for nutrition on the bike?
My nutrition on the bike was CarboPro. It was 300 calories a bottle. So I carried 3 bottles on the bike. I had 2 at special needs, and then I had some gels to supplement. It was a lot more calories than I've ever taken in. I think that was huge too. Like I said, normally I do shorter races where, you know, if you're out there for hopefully, you know, under 5 hours and a half, you can get away with some bad planning in terms of nutrition. The other thing that I started doing was making sure I was topped up. So in the race morning, you know, huge breakfast, actually leftover awesome dinner from the previous night that Joby's wife made for me. And then a lot of rice in the morning, nice and full. And right before I got into the water, popped a goo. As soon as I got out of the water, popped another goo on the bike, you know, get some easy calories in me. And so those bottles of CarboPro, I went through some testing and that was the most I could handle. The problem with CarboPro is I had to supplement with salt, which I hadn't done in training. In training, I was using Scratch Labs, which has all those electrolytes built in. And so I had tried, hey, you know, why don't I just mix that in the bottle? I did that one Saturday, which was smart, and it was terrible. It was smart to try it ahead of time because it just tasted like trash. CarboPro doesn't have any taste normally, and this was, oh, I'm drinking salt water. That was absolutely awful. But, you know, everything went down easy. You know, having five bottles, planning out there for 5 hours, it was a bottle an hour, which is nice and easy to take, easy to keep track of. And as far as the run nutrition, I know you're going to ask anyways. I went in feeling great, you know, getting off the bike, ready to go. And I would take a goo. I took a goo from the first aid station, and I'd have that, and I'd drink it in the last 100 yards coming into an aid station. So that way I could take some water, run through, dump some water on me, grab ice, dump that on me, another water at the end. I wouldn't do a goo every time. It was, I lost count, but it was every third aid station. Yeah. So I probably had 6 or 7 of them. Nice. But yeah. And the other thing that's huge for me, I'm lazy by nature. And so I knew if I was going to walk through an aid station, like that was going to be the end of the race. And so it was no stopping. If I miss something, that's fine. You know, there are plenty of aid stations every mile. And so it's grab and go, same pace. I mean, you said cadence, you probably didn't see me in an aid station, but it was the same the whole way through.
Yeah. Nice. And mental battles out there. Did you at any time during the race, did you feel that you had to fight off any like negativity, or where was your mind during the race?
So I saw it sitting in the garage, you know, going through so many hours on the trainer. I saw this video and it was about an endurance athlete, and he was talking about, you know, once you're in the zone and you're not thinking about anything other than the next step, the race just flies by. But once you start thinking, ooh, I have 10 miles to go, I have, you know, 50 miles on the bike, whatever it is, you're kind of already beating yourself down because you're thinking, oh, about all these other things I have to do. And I really didn't go through many struggles. The bike, like I said, I wouldn't say it was easy, but there were no struggles. It was just, yeah. I was prepared. And when I got onto the run, my goal was 9 minutes a mile, and I was going fast. Like I looked down at the beginning, like 8 minutes a mile right out of T2. I was like, well, this is terrible. Slow down, slow down, slow down. Every time I'd look down at my watch, 8:30. I can't go slower than 8:30. Like my legs just aren't doing it. Yeah. So, all right, let's hang on and see how it goes. And it felt great. Just one foot in front of the other. Go, go, go. And it was funny when I got to about mile 6 or 7, there was a guy, we're, you know, obviously going about the same speed as me. He was definitely not on his second lap. And he turned to me. We were just kind of running along the river there. He said, man, you know, they always have the little mile markers and you'll see, you know, mile 6, and then you'll see what, mile 19 right afterwards or something like this. And he's like, oh man, wouldn't it be great if we were at mile 19? I thought, oh man, like,
sorry, bro.
I really thought to myself, and it's going to sound crazy, like, no, I don't. Like, this is where I need to be right now. But I thought, man, I hope you pull it together. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to work out. But the whole way through that first lap, no problem. And by the time I got to mile 19 or 20, it became a battle. It became a mental battle. And it was, all right, you know, this is what you train for. You train for running at the end, keeping those feet turning over. And I knew then, especially like if I slow down, if I walk through an aid station, that's going to be the first of many.
Yeah.
And so it was, okay, you can do this, keep going. And I wasn't really checking my watch all that much as far as pace. I definitely didn't look at time all day. I knew I was going well. But when I had sat down and done the numbers earlier in the year, my goal was 10 hours, 17 minutes. And I was thinking, all right, you know, this is doable if you keep going. And Joby was out there and a whole bunch of other friends, and they're, oh, you're killing it. You're having a great day. I'm like, I'm feeling good. And so, you know, those last 7 miles were a battle, but it was just keep that cadence going. And so, you know, came into the finish line and I kind of had a feeling like, there's a chance you could go under 10 hours, but I knew if I looked at my watch and had, okay, well, if you go this pace, then I'm starting to do math in my head. So I didn't want to have that going. I needed all my mental energy to just keep doing what I was doing.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you knew you were close to 10 hours, but you intentionally didn't try to figure out exactly where you were at.
No, I didn't look at time all day. Not once.
That's awesome.
And so I just knew, like, hey, if things went crazy, like 10 hours is a possibility. Like I knew 10:17 was pushing it. I had a friend that, Brandon, that did Ironman Arizona last year, and he was right under 10:30. I was like, holy crap. Like I could never do that. That's amazing. Once I started penciling out the numbers, like, I think I can go under 10:30, but like somehow each of those half hour blocks is just feels so insurmountable compared to the next. So I guess it was floating in the back of my mind, but not really as like something I could do.
Yeah.
Just like, people probably go under 10 hours.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you did an amazing job. Great job on just overall the whole race and from start to finish. And you know, I've talked to you about what you did for training and your buildup and the fact that you now have a young daughter,
a baby girl,
who's beautiful and just amazing. You went out there, you completed the race and you just killed it. Great job overall. Wanted to ask you a couple of things regarding, our sport, it can be a grind sometimes and really there's no replacement for the work that you have to put in. We have to put in the work, we have to put in the time, the right sort of training. Where did you draw your motivation from, like to put in the work day in and day out?
So I don't know if you're listening to this, you might listen to a lot of podcasts, and I listen to a lot of Jocko Willink, and something I got from him, and maybe I had done this before, but he definitely solidified it. You don't really need motivation if you decide to do something. And I had decided, okay, this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Sunday morning, getting up at 4 to do a long run, or, you know, Saturday with a 6-hour bike ride after my friends drop off after 3, you know, it's just that's what I was going out there to do. And it wasn't really an option to not do it.
Yeah.
It was like, or you know, a long day at work and come home and you have to get some training done at 8:00 at night. And like, all right, well, God, I'm not going to not do it.
Right.
And once you start to build those habits, it's just so much easier the next time. You know, it's hard in February. And then by the time you get to June, like, oh, this is just normal. We went on a month road trip and I took my bike and I didn't miss a day running or riding. And so, I don't know, there's definitely motivation, but that motivation was, hey, you know, I want to see what I can do. Yeah. And it wasn't, I'm signing up to see what I, you know, maybe I can do this, but no, I'm going to see what I'm made of. Cause I think everybody gets into this sport who really gets into it. I don't know. I wasn't there to compete with, you know, someone like Joby, who's going to kick my butt because he's a phenomenal runner. I'm not there to compete with anybody. I'm here to see, like, can I make myself a better person than I was last week, last month, last year?
Yeah. And I think that's the draw of the sport, right? Where, I mean, there's very few people who are winning races, and yet why do so many people do it? And for me, just like yourself, I want to see what I have to give and how competitive I can be with myself. And I think that provides the drive that you need day in and day out to continue putting in the work.
Well, same thing. So I broke 10 and a half hours, but that's a number, but that meant, you know, what is the meaning there? The meaning is all that training I did for 10 months to get ready. You know, you go back to work and, oh, how was your race? And it's nice that people remember, like, oh man, it was great. Like I broke 9.5 hours, but they're just impressed by the time, you know, it doesn't have that same meaning unless you've been part of it.
Yeah.
And same thing, you know, everybody has their different numbers. And for some people, that'd be a terrible day going 9:55. Yeah. And for, you know, people like me, it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the beauty of the sport. We all have different benchmarks for how we define accomplishment and success. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
And you did, like I said, it was awesome to watch you. Want to finish with just a couple of words of advice you have for anybody out there considering an Ironman or maybe focus on the half Ironman distance. What advice would you give to them as far as preparation and just putting the time in to train to get the results?
I mean, that's it. It's great to have a coach directing your training, getting you the most efficient use of your time. But there are plenty of people who think that hiring a coach or buying a new bike, buying a new helmet, getting some fancy wheels is going to make you faster, but not even close. You know, yeah. It'd be nice if you could buy all those things, but that consistent effort week to week, day to day, getting out there and getting it done is all it is. If you get out there and you're not feeling it, okay, you know, it's a long ride. I have to get 5 hours in, but you half-ass it for 4.5 hours. Man, you did great half-assing it and getting it out there. Yeah, it may not have been awesome, but you got everything done. It's character building, you know. If you can get out there, get everything done, put in the work, put in the time, you're going to get really good results.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Definitely agree with that. So thanks, Adam, for being here and answering questions.
It was a pleasure.
And if you have any questions for Adam, this will be on various channels, but you can post them and Adam will respond. If you have any specific questions, Adam mentioned some shorter intervals, some big gear work, some sub-threshold intervals as well that were part of his training, his aerobic sessions, his hill repeats on the run, his his long runs, watching his heart rate. If you have any questions about any of those specifics, like you want maybe a specific workout and you're curious about it, feel free to ask your questions. And I know Adam will respond and kind of let you know some specifics. But keep in mind, you know, it depends on the time of the season and the buildup. So it'll have to be kind of given in context when he does explain what it is. But I know a lot of you might find some of that helpful. So if you have any questions about that, feel free to ask and he'll definitely get back to you on that.
For sure.
So yeah. Thanks again for being here.
Oh, it was a pleasure as always.
You guys have a great day and I hope hearing Adam's story and his accomplishments and the work he put in and how he went from, you know, a not so great first Ironman to an absolutely phenomenal second Ironman. Hopefully it inspires you and inspires you to push harder, to work smarter, and to just get the most out of yourselves and to live up to your full potential, whatever that might be. All right, so you guys have a good one. Take care and happy holidays.